Hello everyone and welcome to the Digitally Uploaded podcast, the digitallydownloaded.net weekly podcast. Hopefully you've all been listening in each week. We should have some good stuff to talk about this week. We've got with us this week, no Alan, he's taking a break. He had enough of me. We've also got, we do have Brad.
Hello there.
And Brad's going to talk to us about the Nintendo Switch since he's actually played the thing, which is good. And we've got Matt.
Hello.
Who is back after beating his microphone around until it worked.
Yeah.
Welcome back, everyone. That was our customary Hatsune Miku track to kick things off. This week, it was Hand in Hand, which is bright and happy and should put everyone in a good mood, which is good because we're going to be talking about the Switch first up. And so, Brad, you're actually down in Melbourne to play the thing on Nintendo's invitation. What did you think of the Switch and should we all be buying the thing?
Okay, so when I initially went down to Melbourne, I went down with a little bit of hesitation because the presentation didn't really sell it 100% for me. But once I got my hands on the actual Nintendo Switch itself, it completely changed my mind. I know that, Matt, you weren't really a fan of the ARMS game, but that was actually one of my favorite games on show because it was like Wii Boxing, except good, if that makes sense. Just the way that the small controllers fit into my hands, even though I have quite large hands, I was actually quite comfortable, which was surprising. There will be pauses while I just give my thoughts on what I want to talk about next, so I'm sure. Sorry,
Alan. No, that's right. If we talk about ARMS first, then, I mean, I guess my thing about it was that, you know, I'm not a huge fan of that kind of bright, cartoony aesthetic that Nintendo seems to be going with at the moment with the stuff like Splatoon, and this one seemed to be similar to that. Would you say in motion that the game kind of looks a bit like Splatoon?
Yeah, so it reminds me kind of like a cross between Splatoon and Overwatch. Like even to the point where there was a character in ARMS called Mechanica, and she looks like a cross between two of the female characters from Overwatch, whose names escape me right now, but the aesthetic is a lot similar.
ARMS looks potentially, obviously having not played it from, I think that was one of the games that stood out most to me in the presentation, just because it looked like it could potentially be really cool. But the thing that I find really weird about it, and I don't know if it shows a bit of a lack of confidence on Nintendo's part that they don't want to take this much of a gamble with it, was this: it would have been the perfect opportunity for a new Punch-Out game themed around the Switch and with the same sort of mechanics, but sort of breaking out. And I think that might have got people's attention a lot more.
Yeah, so I'm a huge fan of Punch-Out, and I probably would have preferred had they gone the Punch-Out direction, because even Punch-Out on Wii had a very similar cartoony aesthetic to what ARMS does have as well. But I think what they're going for here is just the ability to be able to punch your opponents and everything from the other side of the arena, whereas that probably wouldn't have been as, you wouldn't have been able to do that as well in Punch-Out. So I'm thinking, from what the Nintendo rep there told me, is that they're going for kind of a deeper combat system, and I think that distance with the ARMS can achieve that, especially with the way that you can kind of tilt your controllers to turn your ARMS in mid-punch, if that makes sense, and the way you can block and pick people up. Like, it's quite deep from the 10 minutes I spent with it. So I'd like to see a lot more in terms of whether they're going to add extra characters and things like that. But first impressions, it's a pretty good game.
Sure. So to move on to, I guess, the one that everybody's kind of most excited for with regards to the Switch, obviously Zelda, especially now that it's been announced that it will be a launch title with the console, which is good. It needed one, and I guess that's the one that probably will launch it. You had a bit of hands-on time with it, Brad. What did you think of it? Is it the next step forward for that series, do you think?
Yeah, well, look, I'm probably one of the biggest Zelda fans that's on the DDNet team. So obviously I went into this one with high expectations based on the previous trailers and everything that we've seen of it so far. So from what I've played of it, it was the same 20-minute demo that a lot of people talked about on the Wii U a few months ago. But this time we got the opportunity to actually play it on the big screen, as well as pull it out of the dock and see how well it actually runs on the smaller screen. Because I know with other devices like the PlayStation Vita, playing those big console experiences on a smaller screen doesn't really translate. But playing the Zelda game on the Switch, the screen's probably a little bit bigger than what the Vita has. So it actually allowed for enough detail for me to actually be able to see the small blades of grass and everything like that, that you kind of need to be able to see in a game like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, I thought it played rather well. There's no real frame rate drop even when I pulled it out of the dock, which was good to see. It was a very, it was a really, really good game. I'm very, very hyped for it.
Did you get a chance to play it enough to get a feel for how it handles its loadings, for, you know, the kind of seamless experience? Because we've seen some maps come out since that kind of place it about as big as Skyrim's world. And I assume the game has to load at points. So kind of how's that world kind of split up as far as you can tell?
So for the complete 20 minutes that I was playing it for, it was completely seamless. So once I kind of started out in this small, like, cavern kind of area where I had to go and learn some of the basic controls and everything. Once I started heading out of that cave, and when you see the kind of sprawling, the land around you, I would guess that it must have been loading while I was in that cavern, putting it back into, just loading it up while I was heading out there. So, and then I talked to different NPCs. Then I played different cutscenes and things like that. So I think a lot of the loading happens in the background. So yep. It was very seamless.
Sure. And how much does it feel like an RPG? I mean, I know there's that endless debate about whether Zelda is an RPG or not. And it kind of isn't from the previous games, with the exception of perhaps the NES one, the Zelda 2. But do you think that this one is veering a little bit more towards an RPG, or is it very much still a Zelda structure just in an open world now?
Yeah, so I think it leans more towards that Zelda game in the open world, but just with a couple of Skyrim-like elements where you can just grab those weapons and things as you go, picking up different equipment and things like that. But when I looked into the menu, there wasn't a lot of slots for different kinds of armor. So I don't know if that means there's not going to be many different varieties, or whether that means you can only hold so many at once. That wasn't very clear. But I think it maintains that amount of familiarity that Zelda fans will still enjoy it, but enough to try and coax at least a few of those Skyrim-type players into at least giving it a go.
Sure, gotcha. So Matt, has Brad's description just sold you on Zelda?
I was sold on Zelda anyway. one thing that I would really like to know, and I don't know if there's any indication in what you played, and I'm guessing not, because it seems like something that Nintendo would kind of, they'd hold the cards close to their chest on this. But did you have any interactions in the demo, like with Zelda herself, the character? And like, was there any sort of indication on whether you might actually get to play as her? Because with her, the new design for her that they revealed, it kind of seems like a really wasted opportunity if you don't actually get to play as her.
Yeah, so I think at some point in the game, it would be great to be able to play as her. But as for any indication while I was playing it, none whatsoever. So I think either Nintendo's playing their cards close to their chest, or there's just no... like, there's no opportunity to play as her in the game, which would be unfortunate, I agree, because I would love to be able to actually play as her in a mainstream title.
I would love to know, just going back to Hyrule Warriors, I'd just love to know the kind of the usage statistics for each of the characters, because I suspect that Zelda especially would be a really popular character for people. And it just baffles me that Nintendo hasn't got around to giving her a proper game of her own.
Yeah, well, even I've even suggested this in like talking to people, that you've got this opportunity there to have a game where you play as Link, a game where you play as Zelda, and a game where you play as Ganon, and you can base those games around the different forms of the Triforce. So you could have a game based on Ganondorf's power. You can have like a more of a puzzle kind of game based on Zelda's wisdom. things like that. But yeah, it's an opportunity that Nintendo could have had already, but yeah, for some bizarre reason, they just haven't gone with it.
Yep. So you've played a lot of the games, and we have got previews from all the games that you played up on DDNet. We haven't got too much time, more time to talk about any of the games in particular right now, but there is one I wanted you to quickly check off, if possible, Bomberman, because that's personally the one that I'm most looking forward to. It's been like 7 years since there was a new Bomberman game. Now it's sitting with Konami. And yeah, it was kind of a surprise because I didn't know it was coming before they announced it at the Switch event, and it looked all right to me. So how does it play?
It plays just exactly how you'd want Bomberman to play. The only version I got to play was like just that vanilla style multiplayer mode. But in saying that, Bomberman's vanilla multiplayer mode is still incredibly fun.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, they could probably just release that by itself and I'd still be sold on it, as long as I could play it in multiplayer, because yeah, that vanilla Bomberman is just endlessly good fun. How does it look? Because I know it's been a little bit controversial that the frame rate has been capped at 30 frames per second for Bomberman. It seems like they've put a little bit more effort into making it a bit more vibrant in terms of the visuals.
Yeah, so the visuals themselves were like pretty detailed from what I played of it. I didn't get to play it on the smaller screen, so only just on the larger screen, just with one of the little Joy-Cons on its side. It was only seemed to be capped at 30 frames a second, but that's not a huge selling point for me. I know, like Alan, he loves his 60 frames a second, but it played really well from what I played. 30 frames is fine for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I assume this one will be completely like, because the Switch is up to 8-player local multiplayer, I assume that feature will be there in full with the final game. So you can go out and play with your mates anywhere, Bomberman.
Yeah, and the more the better in Bomberman as far as I'm concerned.
I feel like if there's any game where frame rate hysteria is least relevant, it's probably Bomberman.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get it either. I know people like their games to be silky smooth and all of that, but Bomberman, I remember the N64 one, the 3D one, which was not the best Bomberman game anyway, but we still, my brothers and I played an awful lot of it. It could not possibly have been more than 30 frames per second, if not dropping under. So, you know, pick your battles, I guess. If it's a first-person shooter, then sure, maybe 60 frames per second is relevant, but I don't think it is with Bomberman either, to be honest.
Yeah, I think there's just too much going on the screen to even notice what the frame rate is anyway. Like, that's just my personal take on it.
Brett, what was your... Being the only person here who's actually played it, how did you find the hardware, like the controllers and stuff? How did it actually feel in your hands to play it?
Surprisingly comfortable. I did get a chance to play pretty much every game style that they had. So just holding the Switch with the two Joy-Cons in the side. I tried to get a feel for the weight of it, but they had the those big locks, so they were tethered, so you couldn't carry them around anywhere. So it was a bit hard to actually gauge how heavy the device itself was. But it did feel rather comfortable in my hands. It'd probably be about roughly half a centimeter taller than what a new 3DS XL is. So if you can hold one of those, okay, you should be pretty okay with holding the Switch. Holding the Joy-Con on its side, I obviously got to play Bomberman with the Joy-Con on its side. I also got to play Mario Kart 8 Deluxe with the Joy-Con on its side. And even though the Joy-Con itself is like a tiny little controller, I was still able to, you know, maneuver, do the sliding boost turns, and use the items and find, all of the control schemes seem to be pretty comfortable. We'll be right back.
And welcome back. That was some music from Fire Emblem. Obviously, we picked that because now we're going to talk about Fire Emblem. So the big news, I guess, this week was that Nintendo held a direct one of its online videos showing off some of the Fire Emblem games that has come in along. And it's obviously going to be putting a lot of effort into Fire Emblem this year. It has four games coming across various platforms. There is a mobile game, which is out early next month. There is also a 3DS Fire Emblem in the works, which is a remake of an older game. There is Fire Emblem Warriors, which is Dynasty Warriors crossed with Fire Emblem. And then there's a Nintendo Switch Fire Emblem game in the works, which should be released, I believe, next year. So that's an awful lot of Fire Emblem. It's obviously become a very significant franchise for Nintendo, which is pretty amusing since it hasn't been a franchise that Nintendo has given a whole lot of love to, especially in the West, until relatively recently. And not a lot of people have played too many of these games. So, yeah, I know that both of you have only played a little bit of Fire Emblem, but what are your thoughts on the series? And do you think that Nintendo's doing the right thing in focusing so heavily on Fire Emblem this year?
Yeah, I think they're doing the right thing with it. I think it's a series that has been around for a really long time, but kind of Nintendo hasn't capitalized on it as much as they could have until the last, 5 years? Maybe a bit longer than that. So I think the big push that they're doing with it now is a good idea, and I think it's going to work well for them.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting to see that Nintendo's got four Fire Emblem games in development at once. I don't think there's ever been a point in history where Nintendo's had four Fire Emblem games in development at the same time. So they're obviously banking a lot of the future on this franchise. Just makes me wonder exactly what their business strategy behind trying to get as much Fire Emblem out. Is there going to be like are they looking for a broader market appeal behind a franchise like Fire Emblem, or is it just it happens to be that they have the hardware that they want to make these Fire Emblem games for all of a sudden?
Well, Matt, I mean, given that you've only played the one Fire Emblem game so far, what I can't remember which one it is, sorry, but what about Fire Emblem is is of interest to you? I mean, are these four games of interest to you at all? And if so, in what way are they?
The only one I've played is Fates, which is the most recent one. And I don't know, I guess broadly speaking, most of the things about the game were interesting, but I think what appealed to me most was the characters and the storylines and the relationships that develop between, not just between the main character and the various suitors, but just all the different pairings of characters. I do joke that they should just ditch the combat side of Fire Emblem altogether and embrace the series for the dating sim that it is. but realistically, I mean, obviously combat is an important role and there's a lot of depth to that and it's quite exciting. So, but I definitely think the characters and the stories are the most appealing.
I think you're onto something there. I'm just imagining something like Love Plus Fire Emblem Edition. Now that'd be a great episode.
Yes, definitely. So I guess in light of that, I am quite looking forward to the new games. Fire Emblem Warriors should be fun just because it's a Warriors game and those are quite fun anyway. I think Fire Emblem fits really well with that. I'm curious to see how they'll, or if they'll incorporate all those kind of relationship and story elements into that. And I'm a bit curious about the mobile game, but I'm kind of a little bit on the fence as far as I'll definitely play it, but I'm not sure how much I'm looking forward to it because it just kind of depends on how they monetize it and how much hinges on gacha, random draw kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of that game, there is a mobile game which plays a little bit like Fire Emblem out there already, which is also free to play, called Phantom of the Kill, which is pretty good. I'm hoping Fire Emblem has better production values and has a little bit better balance to it than that one. And fingers crossed. I mean, this is going to be Nintendo's first proper free-to-play mobile game, so I expect there'll probably be some teething issues. Hopefully they're not too bad that the game kind of sinks, because having Fire Emblem on my phone would be really cool fun. In terms of the Warriors one, that's the one I'm probably looking forward to the most. And the reason I say that isn't, it is the perfect fit for Fire Emblem, I think. Not so much because it shares a fantasy theme, and Warriors games kind of do well with fantasy themes. It's more because, as you say, Matt, the characters are kind of the real pull for Fire Emblem, and the kind of fan service in being able to take one of your favorite characters and then kind of go out and bash a billion different billion enemies on the head is really appealing. I guess the problem that Nintendo and Koei need to kind of sort through is that everybody has their own favorite kind of Fire Emblem character, and there's enough of them now that they can't possibly stick them all into the game. So some people are probably going to end up disappointed with the list of characters that end up in the final game. I'm just hoping that Lin gets in, because if Lin doesn't, that's it. That game's getting gnawed out of 10. And yeah. But otherwise, I'm looking forward to the game. Just make sure that it has Lin in it.
Yeah, Fire Emblem Warriors is the one that I'm looking forward to the most out of those four as well. Not just because it's a Warriors game, but mostly because it's being made by the same people who made Hyrule Warriors, and Hyrule Warriors is one of my favorite games that I have ever played in the Warriors series. I just hope that the character selection isn't as limited as Hyrule Warriors, but as Matt said, there are more characters in the Fire Emblem universe that they can pull from, so hopefully it won't have as much of an issue there. Also, I hope that it has a really good cooperative mode, because that's probably where Hyrule Warriors kind of fell. Because I do like to play Warriors games with my family. We just like to just beat up everyone. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it'd be really good. I'd really love to see a Warriors game finally have a proper kind of competitive mode. One of the things that the Warriors games have is co-op. They almost always have co-op in them, and that works fine. It would be really cool to be able to take your Nintendo Switch, go out and meet with some buddies, and then everybody kind of sit around and then compete over the same battlefield from different sides. That would be something very different, and I'd love to see that.
I think, And when you say that, I think it definitely needs to have that, because that'll be perfect for Switch, just for the portability of it and the ease of going from home console and then just grabbing it and taking it away. I think they'd be missing something if they didn't do that.
Yeah, it's something I felt that Koei's been missing from the Warriors games for a long time now. Like, they've put online modes in where you can play competitively, but when you do that, it's just a one-on-one kind of battle. None of the kind of the need to capture bases or travel around, you know, the large world beating up the thousands of peons and so on. It's just one-on-one, which is a bit of a misfire, and those modes never last very long. I don't know why Koei's never put a proper competitive multiplayer mode into its Warriors games. It's weird. Fingers crossed. I think the other thing to note about the Warriors series in general, just to go on a little bit of a digression here, is that it should be an interesting year for that series, because the next Dynasty Warriors game, which I believe is planned for release this year, is actually going to be proper open world. So it seems like there's going to be quite a bit of effort from Koei to take the next step with the series, and we might just see a little bit of where the future of Warriors is going to go with Fire Emblem Warriors, if it's one of the earlier ones out.
Going back to talking about multiplayer, I think the one major condition is that it would require everyone to actually buy a Switch. and I know from my experience trying to play kind of PlayStation Vita games that are designed mainly for co-op is that it doesn't work when you're the only person in your city who has one.
Yeah.
I mean, that's always been an interesting issue with handheld games. It's unless you happen to have somebody in the family who also has one of those units, it can be difficult to get a multiplayer game going. But yeah, I don't think Fire Emblem Warriors will be focused on multiplayer. Whatever multiplayer is in there will be, you know, additional to the main quest and the single player mode. And I think that's probably the right way to go about it. But it does seem to me like the Switch is a little bit, because it has that home console element as well, it's probably going to be a little bit better for multiplayer than the Vita or the 3DS or whatever. So, yeah, it's all very interesting. Fingers crossed that they can pull it all off, because there's a lot of potential there with the franchise and Warriors in general, and the Switch. So lots of potential. It's just whether they can execute on any of that. Welcome back, everyone. That was a track from Galgun, Double Peace. The reason we've played that song is because we're going to chat a little bit about censorship. A little bit of news that came out this week was that Galgun has been banned completely in New Zealand, which is a little bit weird since it's been quite a few months since it was released. But yeah, there it is. You can't buy it anymore in New Zealand. And yeah, you've read through the report, Matt. What are the reasons for it?
The report is really weird, and without going into too much detail, it's like an 8-page report. Basically, the argument is that it exists solely for the purpose of sexualizing school-aged girls, and therefore it's injurious to the public good and can't be sold to anyone regardless of their age, which is, there are a lot of problems in that. And just, yeah, looking at the detail the report goes into, where it goes into some amount of detail about specific scenes and the game and stuff, there's a lot of things that I think that they've willfully or ignorantly just missed about the game. And obviously, there's a huge satirical element in there that's kind of glossed over in the report. But yeah, not just that. It kind of, the weirdest thing is that it mentions that the lack of difficulty, and therefore you don't have to work very hard to get to the saucy bits, and therefore it's worse, or something to that effect, which doesn't make a lot of sense, and also misses the whole point of it being an arcade game with the focus on high scores, which, yeah, I don't know. It's all very weird.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we've had these discussions quite often in the games industry, not on the podcast, but you know, we've talked about them on Twitter, and I've written articles about the subject in the past and so on. I guess the thing that frustrates me is that there is that kind of double standard, especially in places like Australia and New Zealand. I know slightly better than Australia, but Australia especially is really terrible at it. It doesn't seem to consider content that isn't related to sex or drugs as being worthy of censorship, basically. So the only games that kind of get banned in Australia are games that either the censorship board considers to be too sexualized or have depictions of drug use in them. And that kind of, for me, isn't very helpful to the consumer, because ultimately these boards exist to the benefit of the consumer. It doesn't really help the consumer if the impact of content is just kind of, there's a kind of double standard with regards to the impact of content, because, you know, if you've got really high impact violent content getting through with an MA 15 plus rating, and then you're banning kind of light sexualized content, or, you know, given an R18 rating or whatever, it kind of doesn't give the consumer the information they need to know about the actual impact of the game on the young impressionable mind, if that makes sense. And that's kind of my issue with the way that censorship's handled. If there was consistency there, and then all types of content were considered with equal weighting, I would probably have less of an issue with it than I do at the moment.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% on that. And I know it's obviously a big problem in Australia and in New Zealand as well. I think it is maybe splitting hairs a little bit, but from the reading the report, the main concern is not the sexual content, broadly speaking, but the fact that it specifically is in relation to underage or under 18 girls. And it is encouraging, I guess, is the word that they use, is that it's objectionable because it tends to promote and support the exploitation of children and young persons for sexual purposes, which I don't agree at all that that is the case, is that that is what actually Galgun is. But I think that is an important distinction to make, that it's not just sexual content in any way, but specifically as it relates to children.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, I certainly agree with you that if something's done with this in the spirit of satire or comedy, that should certainly certainly have an influence on how the censorship board looks at the content, because especially if it's satirical in nature, it generally is there to subvert the very theme that it ends up getting banned for. But
exactly.
Yeah. It's really weird that they don't consider that in that light. And there's been other examples of that happening as well. For example, Saints Row, whatever it was, got banned in Australia for a while for having a dildo as a weapon. And in the context of the whole game being very satirical, it was just strange that that was banned for any reason, really. For sexual violence, I believe that was the reason it was banned, which is, it was just weird. But, you know, even if we were to consider that these games, even if Galgun wasn't satirical, again, we just have to go back to the idea that, you know, if you agree that, you know, that content is therefore high impact or dangerous of dangerous to the health of society, or whatever the argument you want to make about it is, that's fine. But again, you then have to look at, there are a whole bunch of games that promote a very unhealthy view towards violence that get through without the censorship board picking up on them. A great example is obviously Mortal Kombat. I don't think you could argue that if Mortal Kombat was serious in tone, it's also quite satirical. But if Mortal Kombat was serious in tone, how you could possibly argue that that content is healthy for a society is beyond me. But because it's violence, it gets through with the minimum of fuss. Whereas a game like Galgun, which is probably lighter in terms of the extremeness of the content than Mortal Kombat is, gets itself banned. So yeah, it's a difficult topic, because people also tend to take it, people get very wrapped up and overreact to certain things as well, which doesn't help the discussion of the topic itself. obviously I'm pointing to there's all these examples of game developers that make edits to their games in order to make them, you know, appropriate for what they think would sell to a Western audience. Fire Emblem, which we were just talking about, is a good example of that. And people get upset and start calling this censorship when it's really not censorship. It's just a company making a decision to make their product as, you know, sellable in a market as possible. And to call it censorship makes it very difficult for us to then discuss actual examples of censorship, which is, you know, the New Zealand board banning Galgun.
Brad, did you have any thoughts on the matter?
Yeah, so I think the weirdest part about this whole Galgun being banned in New Zealand is, like what Matt mentioned earlier, is the difficulty. It's kind of like they're implying that because the game's easy, it's rewarding the player to let them access this supposedly like awful content. But if you look at other games, as Matt mentioned before, Mortal Kombat, like it's not an incredibly difficult game. Like it's gotten to the point where the Mortal Kombat X, you can go onto the PlayStation Store and you can buy 30 easy fatalities for, I don't know, $5 or something like that. So you just press a button to see the most violent thing you could ever witness in that game. Now, to me, that would fall under the category of making something simple to access questionable content. But in that case, it's Mortal Kombat, it's violent, so it kind of gets through, as Matt mentioned earlier. So it's a really confusing topic, censorship, and I don't quite get it myself. Like, I'm a father of two children, so keeping games like Grand Theft Auto, Call of Duty, and things like that, it's when my son, who is currently 14, all of his friends are playing these R-rated games and he kind of wants to play them, but I say, well, look, this is what's in Grand Theft Auto. This is what is the, there are torture scenes where you probably aren't going to handle it as well as you think. But these other kids are kind of already desensitized to it. So in a way, I try and protect my own children by censoring what they play myself. But at the same time, I don't think, I'm not heaps familiar with Galgun, but from what I've seen of it, I don't have a huge issue with it. I wouldn't probably let my 11-year-old girl play it at the moment, but my 15-year-old son, I probably wouldn't mind him having a crack at it. But yeah, it's a very grey area, and I think a lot of it goes down to just what each individual kind of determines as being questionable or not. But I think violence is something that seems to make it far too easy for a violent game to get an R rating or even an MA rating, whereas anything remotely sexualized kind of just gets banned instantly. It's very strange, and it's nothing like the film industry at all.
Yeah, it's funny. Like the most ridiculous example I can think of, it wasn't banned, but there was one of the Atelier games was released on the PlayStation Vita with a swimsuit costume in it, and for that reason it kind of picked up a R18 rating. So just the presence of a swimsuit makes the game, you know, acceptable only for adults, which is just, it's ridiculous. I mean, there are things to what you said there, Brad, which kind of resonate with me as well. One of the things that annoys me a great deal is every time I go into an EB Games or Game Shop, there is inevitably some parent buying a Call of Duty or a Grand Theft Auto or whatever for clearly buying it for their kid who couldn't, they're often 12, 13 years old, and the shop clerk doesn't even bat an eyelid at that. For the rating system to actually work, and for us to be able to argue that the rating system should be consistent and, you know, reasonable to all kinds of content, one of the things that has to happen is people need to start respecting the rating system, and that means shop clerks shouldn't be selling games when it's obviously going to end up in the hands of a kid. No more than you can go into a bottle shop and pick up a case of beer and make it quite obvious that you're going to buy it for your kid and then walk out with it. There's a certain responsibility that the bottle shop can't sell it to you if you're obviously buying it for a child. And that really should apply to games as well. If that was to happen, then we could start arguing that, hey, now let's make the classification system reasonable across all kinds of content, so that we don't find ourselves in this situation where we have to be particularly harsh on certain types of content in order to make sure that, you know, people who shouldn't be playing them are not playing them.
Yeah, I 100% agree, Matt. I don't know if many people know this, but I'm also a teacher. So the amount of children that come from my primary school, I'm a year 3-4 teacher this year, and the amount of kids that are already playing and talking to each other about Call of Duty, like drawing guns on their title pages and things like that, it's quite upsetting. And it's hard to determine whether the parents... It's not that I don't think the parents care. I think there's a lot of stigma around video games and probably most certainly anime as well, where they just think it's for kids no matter what it is, even though the average age of a video game player these days is something, I think it's around 31, 32 years old. But a lot of people who don't play them just think it's for kids. So they go, okay, have your Call of Duty, have fun with it or whatever. Like, yeah. It's not that they don't seem to care, it's that they don't seem to be educating themselves on like what content is in these video games.
Yeah, and that's a good point. There has been studies that have been done by various game bodies in Australia that have found that parents are just not very sure about what the classifications really mean. That's something that obviously needs to be addressed. And I do think that there could be a lot more done about educating parents about the actual impact that some of this stuff can have on the kids. And, you know, if looking even further forward, I'd like to see the classification system start to reflect the impact of themes as well, which happens in film. In film, you can have certain... There are examples of films that don't have any explicit content that would be offensive, but the themes that the film deals with can be quite dark or quite serious or quite adult in nature. And those films are obviously not applicable for children, regardless of whether there's any kind of overt violence or sex in them. And those films can be classified higher as a result of that. I'd like to see that happen in games as well, where you've got games like Battlefield 1 or whatever, which are quite nationalist in terms of their theme, which I would argue is a theme that children should not be exposed to, because then they do start drawing guns on books and stuff. And those games should be rated higher on that basis as well. But again, to do that, you have to get to the point where the community is aware enough of what the classification system is and what it does and the types of content that it is classifying. And then there needs to be consistency across it as well, so that no one's confused when they see what a sticker on the box is saying.
I have a pen. I have an apple. Apple pen. I have a pen. I have pineapple, pineapple pen, apple pen, pineapple pen, pen, pineapple, apple pen. Pen, pineapple, apple pen.